Today, the German foreign minister is in Kiev to try and push a diplomatic solution to the crisis in Ukraine as the world watches. Frank-Walter Steinmeier urged all Ukrainians to vote in the presidential elections later this month and called for dialogue with the pro-Russian people of eastern Ukraine who voted in a referendum over the weekend to secede. The prospect of Ukrainians having to choose between Germany and Russia in 2014, two countries that caused so much slaughter and misery for Ukraine in the last century, is just one of the historical complications facing journalists covering this crisis. For Ukrainian journalists, though, in the middle of it all, the challenge is even greater. And we got a sense of that when a group of them visited New York City and spoke to us last week. Ruslan Denyachenko and Yevhen Fedchenko are with the Kiev Molya School of Journalism, where Yevhen says his classrooms have been transformed by the events of this year.
It's really very difficult to teach now because usually when I was explaining how to cover war and conflicts, I was using example from other countries, and now that's kind of situation within. The main thing I try to deliver to students is that you really need to look into what really happens through this fog of war, because you have a lot of disinformation, you have a lot of propaganda, including a lot of Russian propaganda, which is orchestrated by the government, is very powerful, has a lot of media outlets to deliver these messages, including the social media. So now we have, you know, a lot of information, meaning that you really need to look through much more to find the truth among that.
Yeah, and Ruslan?
I think that, unfortunately, Ukraine was not prepared for this information war.
Who is?
I think Russian media were very
really?
Well, yeah,
interesting.
They were very well prepared. And at the beginning of the conflict, we saw so many, like a flood of propaganda from Russian media. And the Ukrainian media were not prepared to give information and to fight with them, to demonstrate something different. The only one way we can protect our citizens from Russian propaganda is to show them the real things. Ukrainian journalists can go to Crimea and they will follow what are the changes of lives of regular citizens over there. Are they happy with the new Russian government or not? Is their lives changing for better or for worse?
And what is the answer, at least in the early going? Is life better? Is the promise of Russia more than it's worth?
So far, not. Because most of the tourists in Crimea, they were Ukrainian citizens. And now Crimea does not have tourists from Ukraine. So they relied on resources from Ukraine, like water, like electricity, like everything. And now they have to pay higher prices for that. And not a lot of people are happy. They expected that Russia will give them money for free and they will be happy. But now they understand that it's not so easy.
As journalists, what do you make of the argument that some in the West have made that NATO and Europe really misread the situation on the border with Russia, in that Vladimir Putin was just not going to allow NATO to expand beyond Poland, that he wanted a solid sort of end to this embrace of the West, and that the U.S. and Germany and Europe assumed that Putin would just sort of back down. Are they right?
Yeah, I guess now it's clear to everybody what the strategy of Putin is. It's really, as you mentioned, to stop NATO and even European Union moving eastwards. And he could partly achieve that through different means, including the military, as we see in Crimea. And I guess his idea is to create as many conflicts around border of Russia. One of the reasons why they're doing that is, again, to demonstrate that Ukraine is unstable. There is no government which controls the territory. There is no military power in Ukraine that can guarantee the sovereignty. And Putin was never hiding that he does not recognize Ukraine as a sovereign state. So what he is restoring is basically the Soviet Union, but in much worse form. And I'm not sure that Western countries were able to grasp the size of these changes. They are titanic.
They were not prepared. And the only one question for me, who is next? Is it Baltic states where the huge Russian population, or who else?
Are there people that you cannot speak with anymore, can't talk to in the same way?
My wife, for example, she has relatives in Moscow. Now they cannot talk because they are brainwashed by Russian television, and they call and they say, "Hey, what's going on over there? What are you doing? Your fascist government is doing this and this and that." And it's just nonsense because nothing even close. It's not even same zip code. So for my wife, it's hard to talk with her Russian relatives. But people in Ukraine, they understand what's going on. It's hard time for the country, for the government, and for all of us. And I would say that people became more friendly, more helpful to each other. I would say we are at the beginning of the path to something very good.
Can your message win the day, given what you're up against with the Russian media, which you say was way more prepared than the Ukrainian media? Can you win this?
Yeah, absolutely, because the truth has always a chance to win, because finally people realize that white is white and you cannot say it's the opposite. Like Russian media portraying those terrorists in the east of Ukraine as, you know, popular uprising, which is completely untrue and unsupported by facts.
Yevhen and Ruslan, thank you so much. And good luck.
Thank you for having us.
Ruslan Dynyachenko and Yevhen Fedchenko are Ukrainian journalists with the Kiev Molya School of Journalism in Ukraine. We caught up with them while they were on a trip to the United States. Coming up, thinking positively about American ingenuity.
We face a lot of challenges. There's no question. Fresh water supply being an obvious one. Overuse of pesticides, another one. Climate change, clearly. But look, there are plenty of reasons to be optimistic.
Writer and journalist Robert Bryce will share his optimism with us later, but we want to know from you what things you do each day that save energy and what things waste it.
I save energy by not running my air conditioner until it gets to about 90 degrees.
I ride my bike to work to save money on gas.
We have rain barrels at our downspouts to save all that runoff for our garden. But I have to admit that I leave the shower on when I'm washing my hair.
And I leave my computer on at night when I'm not using it.
I leave the TV on to keep my dog company during the day.
TV is a dog's best friend, I always say. Call us at 877-8MYTAKE.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Reputation.com, encouraging everyone to check their online search results, because search results define you or your business. Learn more at Reputation.com.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.